There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You're listening to Drive Live with Tim and NLT, and we're focusing on the business of education.
Drive Live talks education.
We have three guests in the studio with us today. We have Roz Marshall, who's the CEO at Taleem. Roz, good to see you.
Hello, nice to see you.
We have Poonam Bajani, who's the CEO of Innoventure Education. Poonam, great to see you too.
Great to see you too.
We also have Fiona McKenzie, who's the Middle East Director of Gabitas Education. Good to see you too.
Thanks, nice to see you.
Well, this conversation is something that people have been looking forward to because sometimes it can be difficult to understand. I think we know schools here are run as businesses. We know that that's a fact, but we talked about fees on the programme a couple of weeks ago. Lots of parents are concerned about where the fees are going, how that money's being spent, and kind of how comfortable they were with the amount of profit different schools and organisations were making. So essentially, we know there are businesses in education. Do you think there is a problem with them making money, Roz?
No, not at all. I think if you look at the growth of international schools in the country, it's only for the investors that we have the choice for parents that is around today. And that's come from private money, private investors who are looking to actually not make a quick return. Most people realise that education is a very much a long-term hold for their investment. In Taleem's case, we had over 10 years before any money was paid back to the investors. And that's going to be a long-term vision for the organisation too, because the money that you tend to make as a profit gets reinvested every year, and you've only got to look at the quality of the international schools here and the facilities and the investment that goes in technology, artificial intelligence now in lessons, to see how much of that can be reinvested every year to do what's right for the students.
And Poonam, would you say that parents have a good understanding of the fact that schools are businesses in most cases, and like Roz has said, the money is being invested?
Yes, I think parents here are beginning to appreciate the fact that education is a business, but it's a business that strives to provide value and in terms of, you know, high quality, as Ross has just mentioned, you know, with innovation and with drive and standards. So parents are beginning to appreciate the fact that, you know, it is a business.
And Fiona, we were talking about fees on the programme a couple of weeks ago, and some people were saying, okay, yeah, I accept it's a business, but how do I check if I'm getting value for money? You know, it operates as a business. How do I know that that's okay and the amount of profit they're making is okay?
I think one of the interesting things, I mean, I think fundamentally there's nothing wrong with making a profit as long as the standards remain high and the learning and teaching remains central, the central mission of the school, and as long as investment is prioritised over profit. So I think parents get that. I think one of the problems is the perception of making a profit is kind of where they feel a bit uncomfortable. It's what's driving the kind of motivation of the school. As long as that motivation is about the higher standards and getting their children a good education, I think they're quite comfortable with that. But I think it's when they have perhaps a fundamental mistrust of whether that mission is central that things get a little bit tricky.
I'm just wondering, I guess, as a parent, what you probably want to know is that your child is at a good school, that your child is doing well, and most parents want transparency, don't they? And they want to know what a school is doing. My children are now both at not-for-profit schools, and I guess that I understand that any money made is ploughed back into the school. It's a relative level of transparency there, but I don't see the books. How do you address, Roz, first of all, parental concerns over transparency, over what's done with the money?
Well, we have an annual report that's produced for parents for all Taleem schools, which gives them feedback on areas. I mean, we have a survey with parents as well, and our students and our staff each year. So we respond to the key priorities that parents are telling us of what they're looking for in schools, and also giving them a vision of what we can afford to do. A lot of it, of course, you know, your whole revenue in a school is dependent upon your number of students. And with the number of schools in Dubai recently that's grown year on year, schools now are finding it increasingly more challenging to retain the number of students that they have in their schools and to attract new ones, because all the new schools, I think there's 10 new schools that were likely to open in September this year again, and that has an impact. And new investors starting up, most of them have not hit their targets in terms of their revenue. So from that, parents then are looking for something that's new, something that's shiny, but they're also looking for some sense of standards and some sort of continuity. Most parents are looking for their children to be happy in school, to be safe in school, to make friends in school, and hopefully then to achieve something. So those are the four sort of criteria in that order. And transparency in terms of the books and how much, when we talk to parents about the fees in schools, you know, we're always very mindful to tell them of things like the rate of inflation, things that, like the education cost index, where it's a very regulated industry here in Dubai, and the school fees are only allowed to be increased according to a factor of the education cost index, which is published by the National Statistics Office. So in the last 3 years, that education cost index has been 3.21 was the highest, and then it's been declining 2.47, 1.85. And so if you're constantly paying your staff to reinvest in your staff more than that education cost index, then the margins are going to get squeezed. So
which is the great issue, isn't it? Staff issue, of course. We hear that regularly. Fiona, what about you? What do you say to parents when a parent may come to you and say, well, I'd like to know more about what's going on? How much involvement is a parent? Do parents expect, and how much do they have?
I think it's a good point what you the one you raised about value and how do you judge value. And I think the points that Roz has just made are really, really valid. I think some parents are very easily distracted by things like exam results and destination data, because those are obviously very measurable, and that's very important for schools. But I think it is fundamentally that your children are happy, that they are making friends, that they're in a safe environment. Those are all really important, as well as obviously achieving kind of academically. I think in terms of the transparency of the books, it's really hard for schools to be transparent out here. It's an incredibly competitive educational environment. But to put it maybe in some sort of context, looking at perhaps a London school, let's say, you would expect on average 60% of your costs to be around your staffing. And that can go up to anything up to 80% as well. You'd probably be looking at around 15% would be on your premises, about 8% on your catering, probably about 6% would be on your financial aid, so bursaries and scholarships, that sort of thing. 6% kind of miscellaneous, and then you might be making up to a 5% surplus. Certainly most of the kind of big independent schools in the UK would be looking to make between an 8 and 12% surplus. Now, of course, the difference there is they're actually set up as charities, the majority of them. Yeah. So they have an obligation to reinvest all of that back into their schools. But at the end of the day, it's still a surplus. So whether you're a for-profit or a not-for-profit, you know, there is still a margin involved there. It's just how that is spent.
Poonam, what about you? Sorry, Anita. What would you say in response to the transparency question or the issue that parents may have?
Yeah, it's important to inform the parents of what are your cost drivers. So, for instance, it is very important to inform them of, you know, what sort of professional development you're undertaking for your staff, and that you are continually, you know, working on your facilities, which is very obvious. They can see what investment is being made in the facilities and the resources and all the curriculum and everything that the school is offering. And it's also important to ensure that you keep developing those areas and be very upfront with your parents when you have the inflation. All that is very publicly available information. So I have found from experience that parents don't even question that, you know, but they do want to know what is it that you're going to do with the increased revenue. So keeping them informed, keeping listening to them through parent surveys or through whichever methods, I think it's very important.
Drive Live talks education.
We are talking all about the business of education this afternoon. Roz Marshall is the CEO of Taleem. Poonam Bhujani is the CEO of InnoVentures Education. We also have Fiona McKenzie, who's the Middle East Director of Gabitas Education. And we've been talking about whether it's right or wrong for schools to make profits because it's a business. Now, we had lots of questions about this, and we've had a question come in on a slightly different note. It says, have schools here witnessed, we've talked a lot about competition, the fact there's so many new schools opening, have schools here witnessed parents switching their kids to homeschooling instead? If I can come to you first, Fiona, do you think that's a trend we're seeing more? Lots of people are talking about the cost of living changing here. Are we seeing parents trying to find their own way and educate their children at home?
I'm certainly seeing a rise in inquiries about homeschooling, yes. Not always from a kind of fee-driven perspective. Sometimes it's for other reasons. And there are plenty of homeschool providers in the market who do a good job. It's a very personal decision for people, though. It's not an easy route to take. You've got to be very committed to it. But yeah, certainly I'm seeing a rise in inquiries in that area.
And Poonam, is it something that you've seen?
In very rare cases, and the drivers have been mostly financial in those cases. And in our case, we try our best to find ways of ensuring that the parents can actually keep their children in school.
Advise.
Same again. I think we obviously have a few parents who faced some tremendous difficulties this year with their own job security. And so looking at how we phase some of the fee payments, increase them to 3 terms rather than 2 semesters to help parents plan for the paying their fees. That's been a few initiatives that we've looked at. But we've talked to probably no more than a handful of parents about thinking about homeschooling. But interestingly, in Dubai, they've got an initiative now which is called the Rahul Method, which the government is trying out with 3 students from the Indian High School, I think, this year in September, where students are going to, they're gifted and talented, they've got other sporting excellence and activities to do. So they're looking at picking and choosing their school academic studies at certain times that suit them. And I think this is something to think about for the future, longer term, where students with the personalised learning agenda will have the opportunity to pick and choose different schools or different programmes for themselves at different institutions, some of which could be online, some of that would actually be in a school or in a setting like a higher education setting. And I always with homeschooling, I think, though, and I know a few cases from the UK, it's always about the integration, the collaboration, the team working and the opportunity to meet people, which is the mainstay of making sure that children actually get a focus on that as well as their homeschooling. It's really important for them.
Okay, I don't have children, but if I did and I was sending them to a school and it was a business, that's something, because of my background, would be difficult to understand, because you're working with families that have come from all over the world. So different countries have different perspectives on schools being run as a business. In my head, I probably didn't notice that my school was being run as a business because I was a child and it was very simple. But if I'm a parent, I would be expecting to find out, okay, I'm paying these fees. Where are you spending my money, Fiona? Where is it going in schools?
Well, the majority of it is going on your staffing costs. That's the biggest chunk of any school's budget. And quite rightly, that should be the case. I think over here, there are all sorts of hidden costs, which perhaps parents aren't always aware of. And I think perhaps probably Roz and Poonam would be better at explaining those. But, things like, for example, the teacher licensing initiative, which is coming in this year, schools are going to be liable to cover the cost of that. There's all sorts of things that fit with the regulatory environment here, which can impact on your costs, which you're not always in control of.
And Roz, do you think parents do ask the right questions, and is that information available? It might be that staffing are the high cost, but do you think there's a lot of transparency here in that?
I think it is a question of communication both ways. So we try and explain to parents when we put in a fee increase, and we haven't done that for the last couple of years in most of our schools. So when you do actually announce a fee increase to parents, it's then giving them an explanation of where that money is going. So having frozen fees last year in all the schools in Dubai, those parents understand the fact there's a bit of catch-up, really, in terms of trying to reward staff in terms of their actual fees. It's not just always about the salaries of staff either. Don't forget, here in the UAE, we've got a lot of overseas staff. So there's housing, there's health insurance, there's flights, annual flights, which are part of their annual entitlement, and sometimes family benefits too. So the on costs for staff employment are much higher than they would be back at home in your home country, where you go to an independent school, potentially pay a school fee, but everybody's able to drive home to their own house at the end of the day. So there's additional costs in an international setting, let alone, as Fiona was saying, the training and professional development. If you're an IB school, for example, like Poonam and I have in our groups, there is an expectation of the IB accreditation to give so much training and professional development to your staff each year. Similarly, if your school is accredited by the Council for International Schools or the New England Association of Schools and Colleges, you can see these accreditations on schools' headed paper. They'll always be very proud to show them. But a CIS school, a NIASC accredited school, or an IB school has certain requirements to be able to maintain that accreditation, and that's a huge investment for us in training, which is why Talim actually runs all the IB workshops in the region here in the GCC, because it was something we did very much early on when we first started and saw that investment opportunity, really.
I suppose one of the things in my mind is, if I want to send my children to a school, I'm looking at a school where they're going to be happy. Very often that would mean that that's where teachers are happy. That's going to have a knock-on effect to children. If teachers are happy, they're probably going to stay there for some time. This is a very competitive market. We've discussed that briefly, but you have to be able to retain staff. And in a competitive market, if you offer somebody a slightly improved housing allowance or an extra flight or something, it's going to be hard to retain teachers. How do you do that in schools without having to just up salaries or increase benefits? Because you are bound by the index, aren't you? The ECI, Poonam. What's the secret in schools to retaining that talent that you need?
I dare say that the secret in our context has been with staff, that you give them a sense of belonging.
Right.
You when teachers join, and especially so many of them are coming from overseas, you know, when they join, they also have some aspirations, and they also have hopes and dreams for their careers and what they would like to do. So the question of really ensuring that they experience that job satisfaction and a sense of belonging. And I think, you know, there's always that one school that can pay more money, but we've had the experience of teachers. Actually, some of our teachers have left us to go to other schools, which may have paid them more money, but then they're coming back to us. And that's a wonderful thing, that they're coming back to us after 1 year or 2 years, and they want to stay with us because they feel that they have a professional development path to follow.
And I suppose, Roz, back to you for a moment here, because what you need to offer is a career path. Don't
absolutely,
you as well,
yes.
The teachers, and that's something that we're starting to see here. We've got groups here where you can see a very real progression, not just in the one area, I suppose, as well.
Every year we celebrate our 10-year service awards, so for staff who've worked for us in the company for 10 years. And we've done that over the last 5 years, so it's the numbers increasing year on year, which is always very pleasing. But in terms of investing in their career path, you know, annual appraisals, succession plans and training plans for each of the individuals. We always want all of our staff who join us, when they leave, when they choose to leave, and that may well be family circumstances that pull them back to home or they go on somewhere else, but we want them to leave all the better for that experience. And 50% of our senior leaders in Talim schools have been promoted from within, as of today. So that's a policy that we know is working, and we're looking forward to developing and growing more leaders in the organisation. We have training for middle leaders and training for senior leaders ongoing each year.
Fiona, just your thoughts on talent retention?
I think it's really interesting, actually. There's been a survey done recently by COBIS, and 32% of teachers were thinking of quitting the profession before they entered the international market. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So 32% of teachers were thinking of giving up teaching altogether until they took an international posting. So I think that's quite interesting. But 94% of British international school leaders are finding it hard to recruit quality teachers. They're finding it challenging. So, you know, you have got to have good packages in order to get the good teachers to come here. And it's not just about competing with the UK market or the market here. It's also about competing with the Far East market and other countries too.
And when we're talking about quality teachers, what do we mean by that?
That's a good question. Well, somebody who values teaching and learning, who loves kids and loves their subject, is passionate, enthusiastic, is curious, and is going to inspire that child to a love of learning.
I guess it's very difficult to put a price on that, essentially, and that's kind of what brings us back to the staffing costs being so high.
What you can do is measure children's progress, and all sorts of research has been done about that, and there is research to show that a good teacher can add the equivalent of an additional year to a child's learning.
Wow. Yeah. Poonam, you're shaking your head there.
Yeah, I mean, we actually did a survey amongst our students. The student voice is very important. And we did a survey amongst our students to ask them what makes an outstanding teacher. And the thing that stood out was a teacher should be caring and should be passionate about seeing the progress of students in the classroom. And that's what to inspire that degree of, you know, caring for the students and passion for seeing their progress, the teacher has to also be developed. And that's where our InnoVentures Education School are focused on developing the teachers and are growing our leadership from within as well.
What would that have been when you were at school? Sorry to butt in.
What would it have been?
Yeah, would it be, if I was at school, it would have been teacher that doesn't give homework would have been the popular teacher. I wouldn't have thought of the passion.
No.
So it's the difference between kids at school now and my time, I think.
No, I have two great teachers that I still think of now, and I think I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for them. My English teacher just made everything come alive. So, yeah. I don't know. For you. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's such an individual thing. Yeah, the connections with the children, it's such a personal connection.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all remember an outstanding teacher who was wonderful for us in our own school lives. But I suspect in our schools, you know, different teachers are outstanding for different students.
Yeah.
And we had a student at JBS the other day, Jameer Baccalaureate School, who has just moved school. And they said to this child, you know, how are you getting on? And, I'm really enjoying it. He said, in my last school, he said, it really didn't matter. You just turned up and you just went home again and nobody really cared. Here, he said, the teachers really care that you are learning and that you are making progress. And that's because, the children are all part of the school community to make sure that this, you know, the teachers are looking at what are they doing, how are they doing, what are the next steps, how can we stretch you. It's a very much personal agenda nowadays, and so it should be.
We're talking about the business of education. Our three guests today, Fiona McKenzie, who's the Middle East Director of Gabitas Education, Poonam Bajani is CEO of InnoVentures Education, and Ros Marshall is the CEO of Taleem. And we had a text in from, no name on this actually, it says, in what areas will the education market be disrupted in the future? Poonam, can you offer us any insight? I'm presuming this is in the business of education. Can you see any ways that we might see disruption?
There are technologies at the core of the disruption in so many business areas, and so too in education. So there is a lot of research going on and implementation of artificial intelligence, virtual reality, mixed reality, so that is one area where, you know, we expect that there will be disruption in education. The other thing is that through technology, education that was traditionally available only in institutions of higher education is increasingly becoming available in schools. And the third area is also vocational. Instead of just following the traditional path in education, more and more vocational programs are coming into schools, enabling schools to prepare children with a skill set not just meant to go for higher education alone, but also to enter the workplace. So this is coming increasingly into the UAE. And these do, we do expect that, you know, there will be some disruption. But will the school, with the brick and mortar school, go away? Nobody can predict that. If I have to put my 2 cents worth, I would say no. There is a lot of place for brick and mortar because you cannot replace the human interaction, but the form of it will change.
Okay. And Roz, what do you think might be changing?
Well, we're currently looking at designing a brand new school for Taleem, which will be open in 2020. And I think already I can see some of the changes in terms of the design features, the schematics and the architectural thinking that goes into designing an educational space for children of this century. And whether we actually get round to digital printing the actual school's buildings would be quite interesting. They'd probably all melt here. But the delivery of knowledge itself has to be something that will be disrupted. It already is with the internet and the opportunity for children to download information. But the experience of learners will be more interdisciplinary in terms of the subjects. So the subjects they'll be learning, I think, will be far more in a sort of matrix rather than just a silo format. And so we welcome the disruption, really, because that's going to be able to meet the future needs. And we're looking at entrepreneurship skills, just coming back to what Poonam was saying about looking at vocational education and establishing partnerships for internships with organisation, giving people work experiences much earlier on rather than just 16 and 17 year olds. And those already are in place in some of the schools, but there'll be an opportunity, I think, to develop even further. And in terms of the future, I think you've only got to go and visit the Dubai Frame, whereas at the end of that, just as it won't spoil any of it for anybody who goes to visit, but there's a wonderful sort of futuristic display at the end of the Dubai Frame where you really have a vision of what the country here expects Dubai to look like and how the services, whether they're in healthcare, education, business industry, will look in the future, transport in particular, of course, which we already know and read about some of the changes that are coming there. So we have to keep an eye to the future. We have to welcome and embrace the disruptive technologies. And most schools now are looking at that with VR and AI coming into the classroom for the students to use. And the students, of course, are the ones who are going to be further ahead of the adults as teachers in terms of their grasp of this technology too. And that's a great opportunity because teachers are lifelong learners. So we're trying to keep up with them. So hopefully, you know, I have a mother who's 87 who's visiting here this week, and she's on iPad. She has an iPad. She's on WhatsApp groups. And so she didn't have that when she was born in 1930.
She's doing better than Tim. That's all I can say. That's all I'll say. And Fiona, what about you?
I think it's really interesting because I do think education is possibly kind of the last bastion ripe for change. You know, if a Victorian was to walk into a classroom today, they would recognise that nothing really has changed. It's still a very familiar landscape. And I'm not sure whether that's because if it ain't broke, don't fix it, or whether it's just that we've all been too conservative to kind of throw the toys out of the pram and reimagine it. I think there are all sorts of really exciting things that are going to happen. And I actually think the project that Ros alluded to earlier from KHDA, the Rahul project, with this flexibility of learning, where you could ultimately end up with kind of schools without walls, when you can pick and choose your learning from different environments. I think that's a really exciting kind of opportunity that will take developing. I have a suspicion, though, that for disruptive influences in the education world, it's probably got to come from outside. I think those within the industry, it's quite hard to absorb that kind of disruption. If you look at all of the other industries that have been disrupted, it's always come from outside. So I think we watch the space and see what happens.
Hence the partnerships there, because if you do partner as a Microsoft school or an Apple school educators, you know, you do have that opportunity to interact with other people, and I think that's hugely important. You have teachers who develop themselves and their own understanding, also then pass that immediately on to the students, and that's the best opportunity for the students themselves.
Okay, and very briefly, final question. I'll start with you, Poonam, but same question to all of you. We've talked about what parents expect from schools, but just briefly tell us how difficult it is to run an education company, because it's not so simple as take the fees, employ the teachers, open the doors, or everyone would run an education company.
Well, I think the core at running an education company is recognizing that there are lives at the other end.
Yeah.
And if you have your core values and your, you have a mission and you're adhering to those core values and your mission statement, as we really pride ourselves in doing in our case, which is providing a holistic, international and rigorous education for success in an ever-changing world. So if you keep to the core, then running any business, I think, has got its same set of challenges, really. But in this case, there are lives at the other end.
And Fiona, anything to add to that?
I would agree with that. Obviously, I come at it from a slightly different angle. One of my roles is helping families to find the right education for their child. And it is about exactly that, finding the right education for each child. And each child is an individual. And that's the key thing.
And Ros, finally?
I think the very real challenges in Dubai are balancing the requirements of the regulator, the fast pace of change here from the government, with the escalating costs and the fixed or limited income in the market, which is now very much in one of oversupply for the current demand. But it is a long-term hold here for investors, and it's a long-term proposition for people coming to work into the education sector here. And you cannot get away from this most wonderful feeling when you're in a classroom or you're in a school. It's a real privilege to interact with our students, seeing them progress day by day. And whatever challenges you're facing, just talking to any students in any school will just show you how much it is all worthwhile.
That's all we've got time for on Drive Live Talks Education. Our discussion has been all about the business education. Thank you to our three guests. Ros, who you just heard, Ros Marshall, is the CEO of Taleem. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We also had Fiona McKenzie, who's the Middle East Director of Gabatas Education.
Thank you.
And Poonam Bajani, who's the CEO of InnoVentures Education.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.